The following is an AI reading of my blog called
The Road to Bitcoin Adoption Part 2. How do people get Bitcoin?
It is for people who don't have time to read blogs and can listen to podcasts though. So, let's go!
In the first part, we examined Bitcoin's success criteria. The journey to adoption for me revolves around how individuals who wish to use Bitcoin for a specific purpose can obtain it. I'm not concerned about numerical figures, such as the number of countries, institutions, or people utilizing it, nor the monetary value associated with purchasing a flat white in a coffee shop. Using Bitcoin, my primary interest lies in determining whether everyone desiring to utilize Bitcoin has that opportunity. I prefer evaluating the criteria from within the community, assessing the availability for those interested in using it. The external perspective, i.e., does every villager have access to Bitcoin, holds less importance to me. Now, let's explore various adoption paths methods through which people acquire Bitcoin. These pathways operate simultaneously. Regardless of our personal beliefs regarding the most effective route, they all coexist concurrently. What we can achieve is amplifying the signal for one path over another. Adoption using financial institutions. Many people are excited about financial institutions offering access to Bitcoin in various forms. Companies like Revolut and PayPal have made it possible for users to purchase Bitcoin through their apps with just one click, similar to buying Bankcoin. However, in my opinion, this kind of Bitcoin does not offer the full benefits that real Bitcoin provides. As mentioned earlier, Bitcoin offers protection from confiscation, excessive taxation, inflation, capital restrictions enabling easy transfer across any border and regulatory issues. When purchasing Bitcoin through Revolut, PayPal, or similar apps, you may still be vulnerable to these risks. So essentially, you're paying the same price for a product that does not offer all of the benefits associated with real Bitcoin. You might discover when trying to sell it that you'll need to fill out an anti-money laundering AML or source of funds form in order to receive your money back. To convert your Bitcoin, you may need to exchange it for fiat currency within an app, which often involves automatic reporting to various institutions. This process can feel like undressing in front of those institutions, leaving you with speculation on the price instead of actual ownership. Unfortunately, this speculation might not always work because, unlike owning a Bitcoin by signing a valid transaction with Bankcoin, you need to request the institution to send you your Bitcoin or exchange it for fiat currency. This is already possible through services like Revolut. Imagine recognizing different forms of Bitcoin. Bankcoin represents Bitcoin stored at an institution where you don't have private keys. KYC coin is Bitcoin in your wallet, but without privacy since you've shared your personal information with some institutions. Bitcoin, on the other hand, remains true to its original concept. Despite having nearly identical prices, these products possess significantly different characteristics. You can learn more in a chapter how to give Bitcoin back its peer-to-peer character and use it to its full potential from my book Cryptocurrencies Hack Your Way to a Better Life. Also available on Amazon and also in Spanish, what is not so important here is whether this Bankcoin is paper, e.g., composed of derivatives, rehypothecated or really backed one, won by real Bitcoin. What matters is that it's an IOU, a claim on the bank that is settled in fiat currency if you meet conditions unknown to you in advance. If someone is willing to buy a product for about the same price that has none of the features of Bitcoin other than replicating its price, I don't think they'll be happy with their purchase. Add to that the risk of such a centralized institution being hacked or going bust and years of hassle to liquidate in the best case scenario, and the sense of user-friendliness is not nearly as rosy as these institutions portray it to be. Filling out AML forms, notarizations, documenting sources of income, and other not known in advance bureaucratic tasks are, in my opinion, more user-unfriendly and time-consuming than setting up a hardware wallet with a good inheritance setup, funds, ETF, stock, and bonds. In 2017, we've been hearing the same song over and over again, the institutions are coming. The proponents of this adoption path were thinking of pension funds, exchange-traded funds, ETF, or large institutions that will buy Bitcoin on balance sheets. This is partly what has happened. If there are Bitcoin ETFs available, then any broker and even most retail banks can sell you this ETF. In addition to the ease of purchase, many states also give ETFs a tax advantage, using so-called time tests when you hold an ETF for more than a certain amount of time, usually 1 or 3 years. The sale is free of capital gains tax. The ETF has a statute and an information leaflet that explains the expected risk. As someone who enjoys taking risks, I find this situation comparable to watching an action movie in which the main character shoots a tire of a speeding car with one hand while performing a salto. It's like comedy. The claims about risk made by ETFs and funds should be treated similarly. However, similar to selling through Bankcoin financial institutions, this adoption route introduces fragility into the system and does not provide users with all the benefits of Bitcoin. It's a game of future value if the state allows it, if you complete the necessary KYC and AML forms, and if the bank accepts the incoming fiat transfer, then you'll probably reach the future value minus taxes. But if you need to use your Bitcoin for purposes like fleeing the country with your assets or protecting them, this method may not work. You can also partially invest in Bitcoin in the form of shares in companies who buy Bitcoin on their balance sheets or mine it, or with special bonds that are exposing you to part of the Bitcoin price movements. I won't name specific products because I don't recommend them. This is not a good road to adoption. Avoid it, don't shill it, don't cheer it. It's in no way easier or user-friendly. It's a user experience disaster. Interlude, is all adoption good? Bitcoin adoption via Bankcoin is supposedly a desirable thing. It will make Bitcoin more accessible to people. They will realize its benefits and gradually want to hold it themselves. That's what I'm told by Bitcoiners, who say that many people they know personally find it quite difficult to use normal Bitcoin, let alone OTC/P2P traders. This is told to me by people who therefore know how to do it right and know the people they are talking about personally. So I ask, why with peer-to-peer electronic cash would these people use the services of some Bankcoin institution when they know someone who can help them buy Bitcoin in a way that they have private keys and thus custody and really take advantage of all its benefits? Is that laziness to help your fellow people? Here, I'd like to say that I really think that setting up a hardware wallet and buying Bitcoins, especially if I know a Bitcoiner nearby, is significantly easier than setting up a Bankcoin account. Yes, signing a contract, taking an ID, waiting for verification, answering questions about your financial situation and the origin of your funds might not be such a problem by the time you complete this process. You would have installed Trezor One, upgraded its firmware, created a backup of your wallet, and have gone through initial training on how it works. What many people might not be aware of is that when they wish to utilize their Bitcoins, with selling for fiat being the typical option, they frequently encounter additional inquiries and verifications. These may come from the coin institution or potentially even the bank. They could also be reported to several government bodies. A number of individuals attempting to withdraw their assets might see a pop-up message: before you proceed, we need to ask about the source of these funds. However, this isn't necessarily the worst-case scenario. Sometimes, it's an actual form that needs signing in front of a notary and mailing back in. Is this truly the experience we aim to give Bitcoin users? Is this the new, free, parallel monetary system that was envisioned? Of course, the easiest thing for any Bitcoiner to do is to ditch their buddies. Let them go to a Bankcoin institution and enjoy the fact that them buying Bitcoins through the institution will pump up the value of their Bitcoin. Although if anyone believes this, I suggest looking at the daily volume of Bitcoins traded. You don't have friends rich enough to pump your bags. The real story of adoption: I'm sitting at a friend's cottage. Suddenly, my friend's mom comes over with Trezor One in her hand and plugs it into the computer, which is playing music. Another friend shows a Bitcoin address where my friend's mom sends him Bitcoins. The friend hands her cash. Neither of them are IT people. The mom is an artist and my friend is a medical doctor. I sit in mute amazement and smile. This story really happened, exactly like this, and I had nothing to do with it. I had no idea that such an exchange was about to take place. let alone mediated it in any way. This is a story of adoption that you won't see in the coin market cap charts or in the market statistics. It is peer-to-peer electronic cash. Two people with opposite needs decide to solve them. No need for a PhD in cryptography, not even reading of my books or taking my courses. Less experienced people just need half an hour with someone who knows Bitcoin already. This is organic adoption. Everyone involved had Bitcoin in the right form, with what I think are the right goals. They use it as peer-to-peer electronic cash to solve their life needs. They are really hacking their lives. The best road to adoption, community adoption. Community adoption is important. We like to look at centralized entities, measure adoption using a variety of metrics, mostly from centralized entities, and base success on criteria that are common to the traditional financial system, but we're not in a classical financial system. The goal of Bitcoin is to establish a parallel financial system, offering something that traditional finance cannot. Unlike trading treasury bonds or Tesla stock options face, classic finance relies on centralized entities due to its structure. However, Bitcoin operates differently as it's peer-to-peer, decentralized, and permissionless, which is how adoption should appear. For those who find running a hardware wallet and purchasing Bitcoin in peer-to-peer mode challenging, we can assist them. If they're close friends or family, we'll provide help without any cost and with pleasure. As good deeds grow beyond our capacity, we can earn a living by assisting people in obtaining Bitcoin as intended. Our services could involve setting up wallets and making Bitcoin accessible. Now, let's explore the distinction between an OTC trader and a regular participant within the Bitcoin network. When a person needs to pay rent or desires to go on vacation and requires selling their Bitcoins for traditional currency because they can't buy directly, they become an organic counterparty in the trade. The other party is someone seeking to purchase Bitcoin for long-term savings, also known as HODLing. In such cases, the trade is organic and typically occurs without any fee involved. Counterparties may be discovered through a peer-to-peer trading group or via applications like Vexel. A professional and ethical OTC or over-the-counter trader is someone who provides Bitcoin to others as their primary source of income or supplementary occupation. The advantage of an OTC trader lies in being a counterparty to the trade, even when there's no organic counterparty present. In situations where the price of Bitcoin plummets and everyone wishes to buy, or when it rises and many individuals want to sell, finding an organic counterparty becomes difficult due to market imbalance. Only those who genuinely need to sell their Bitcoins will do so at a lower rate. Others simply wait for better conditions. An OTC trader, on the other hand, has no opinion on the price and has hedged the exchange rate. So, the OTC trader is a very useful liquidity provider in such situations and is part of organic adoption. Image from my short ebook Cypherpunk Visions and Trends 20,232,025. Asterisk: people often do not see the informal, organic, and decentralized economy as equal to the institutional and official. However, in many industries, it mediates products and services much better than centralized one-click companies with their own app. If you need to plow your garden in a village, you probably go straight to a neighbor who has a tractor and a plow, pay them money, and in 2 hours you are done. Need to cut wood? You probably won't go to a centralized shop, but will approach a neighbor with a saw. Need to buy Bitcoin? Don't know how to do it? You'll probably reach out to someone in the neighborhood who knows what they're doing and ask them to help you with it. The more inquiries they receive and the more revenue they generate from them, both in percentages and absolute value, the more time they can allocate to making Bitcoin accessible. As more individuals around them possess or have experience with Bitcoin, it enhances their ability to balance the counterparties involved in trading. The ideal market structure of the Bitcoin economy. The market structure within the Bitcoin economy is node-first. It's not a centralized hierarchy, but consists of specialized individuals who collaborate. Alongside this, traditional hierarchical adoption occurs through institutions, yet this isn't my preferred measure of success and doesn't fully exploit Bitcoin's potential, though you may have a different perspective. Peer-to-peer electronic cash signifies node. First, non-hierarchical relationships and electronic cash with features such as anonymity, fungibility, and more. This is why I recommend using Lightning. Image, the transition from hierarchical relationships to diverse peer-to-peer connections. Individual nodes or individuals specialize in their unique abilities and collaborate with numerous other nodes. By specializing in what they excel at, these self-directed nodes lead to a much more fulfilled life for the participating individuals in this market structure. For further reading, check out Searching for Gamma, How to Show the Middle Finger to Hierarchy. Remember that individual nodes in a peer-to-peer network don't have to be the same. In fact, they cannot be. I focus on power users. I have content for beginners too, but my goal is to create smart users who can handle volatility, use more advanced options like collateralized lending to short fiat, or even make Bitcoin available to people as P2P OTC traders. If someone is truly interested in Bitcoin, I can provide very unique and advanced knowledge, whether it's for their personal life, cryptocurrencies, hack your way to a better life, or business purposes. Of course, there are many people dedicated to educating Bitcoiners, and my content or perspective may not suit everyone. The Bitcoin power users that I teach can then help others and make Bitcoin accessible to those who don't know how to set up their own wallet or even where to begin. They can install a wallet for them, show them the Vexel app, sell them their first Bitcoins, explain security measures and what to watch out for, or organize a meetup event. They can also help establishments accept Bitcoin. Individual sovereign users save in Bitcoin or purchase goods and services using it, demonstrating organic adoption through an organic market structure. Conclusion: various paths lead to Bitcoin adoption. Personally, I favor decentralized options that preserve user sovereignty and privacy. Several avenues for adoption exist, such as migrating from centralized platforms like X or Facebook to Nostr. Users may receive zaps initially unaware that they are actually real Bitcoins instead of insignificant likes. Although no road to adoption should be hindered, the organic and decentralized path aligns more naturally with Bitcoin's essence, emphasizing quality over quantity. Can you assist others in their Bitcoin journey by providing guidance on risk management and wallet setup? First, would you consider selling them a hardware wallet or the cryptocurrencies book, so they have something to refer back to when questions arise later on? Second, what unique skills do you possess that you can utilize within this captivating market structure? Lastly, the beauty of Bitcoin often lies in the aspects that are unseen. It's intriguing to contemplate how many Bipleto people trades will unfold in a similar manner to my cottage experience, imperceptibly and directly between peers.
Thank you for listening. I'm sorry for any possible quirks generated by the large language model or text-to-speech engine, but I think it is worth transferring these blocks into audio form for people who can't or don't have time to read. So I hope it was useful to you, and I would really appreciate if you used value for value podcasting apps to listen to this episode and stream me some sets or Boost. I read all the comments on the Boosts as well. So if you have any comment about this content, feel free to use Fountain.fm or any other app and boost this podcast. Thank you very much.